How many people were in the session earlier, just before, just a show of hands? So this will be a follow-on to a methylene chloride presentation that David Harrington, a colleague from the California Department of Public Health, gave earlier. But for most of you, it's going to be new. So my objective is really to talk about how to get rid of methylene chloride from the shelves of Home Depot and other hardware stores and retail chains around the United States. Anybody who knows me and comes into my office will see every can of methylene chloride and paint stripper that I could find, along with the non-toxic alternatives. And they're sitting on my desk. It's probably some kind of violation of the health and safety code. But I have them sitting on my desk, and every time I go to work, it reminds me that before I retire, I would like to go into the local hardware or Home Depot store and see this particular set of products either gone behind lock and key or on the very bottom shelf instead of eye level. So this is, think of this talk as really a paradigm and a failure of chemical policy in the United States. So methylene chloride to me is the poster child for what is wrong with chemical policy in the United States and a thought experiment in what we can do differently. When I'm not Dr. Harrison during the day, my staff know me as the Toxic Avenger by night. And so I have a persona, and as part of my Toxic Avenger escapade, I want to get rid of this product. So I imagine myself perched behind aisle 22 in your local Home Depot store, and when you reach for that product, I leap out from behind the aisle and say, "Stop! Stop! There's a better product." And that better product that David Harrington talked about earlier today is called benzyl alcohol. And it is manufactured by a couple of manufacturers. So the question is, why isn't benzyl alcohol at eye level? It's sort of like the story of when you go into the supermarket, how come Fruit Loops are at the eye level of our kids? How come we don't find healthy cereals at eye level? And so I want you to take away methylene chloride the next time you go into a hardware store, and you have to do a do-it-yourself, or you're hiring a contractor, that they don't use this toxic paint stripper. And I want you to also remember Bob Harrison's journey to the Home Depot headquarters outside of Atlanta, because that's where I'm going to end. So I don't have any relationships to this close. This is a project that involves a lot of folks, including Dave Harrington, who's at the back of the room. Lauren Jo, I want to call out because she led this very fascinating store survey that I'm going to share with you. So why did I start out caring about this? So I've been doing this work for close to 30 years, and I've been part of investigations of workplace deaths for almost 25 years. And I've been involved with our investigators out in California with close to 250 workplace fatalities, and I've gotten to know most of them very closely, not personally with the families and the victims, but I've been involved in figuring out what are the prevention recommendations. And about 3 years ago, there was an article published in the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report that 12 workers who had gone into the homes and stripped paint off of bathtub walls, off of bathtubs and bathtub walls, had the doors and windows closed, and they came into the bathtubs, slumped over, and died. And it turned out that these deaths had been occurring over about a 10-year period, and it wasn't until a couple of alert public health epidemiologists in Michigan had two fatalities that they linked all these cases together over time and space. And they were all the same. These workers had gone into the local hardware stores or gotten it from their local painting supply houses, and they didn't realize that if they went into a bathroom and they closed the windows and doors because methylene chloride smelled bad, and they let it soak in for a half hour, and then they came back and they went into the bathtub to strip the finish, they would slump over and die. And shortly after that story came out in the MMWR, we had a methylene chloride death in California, which occurred at Vista Paints. There's one of our occupational medicine residents, Julia McIsaac, going out on an investigation and filming this paint tank. And what had happened here is that one worker had gone down to clean the accumulated paint off the inside of this paint tank, and he had applied methylene chloride paint stripper, let it soak on, and then was pushing it off with a spatula. And he didn't show up for his morning break. The workers wondered where he was. The supervisor went out to look for him, and one of the features of this case that I'll always remember is that the supervisor, when we interviewed him, said, well, I thought he was sleeping. I looked down, and I just thought he was a lazy Mexican down at the bottom taking a nap. And he went away and didn't come back until he didn't show up an hour later. Then another coworker went to look for him. He went down, tried to rescue that guy. He was overcome at the bottom of the vat. And then finally an alarm bell went off when two workers went missing. The first guy died, and the second one fortunately recovered, but I think just in the nick of time. They had used methylene chloride paint stripper. This is a paint company that's in the paint business. I think there's no question this kind of company, really, the question, how come you didn't know better? I mean, this is your, these are your people. You know, this is paint. This is like paint stripper, same category. No confined space rescue plan, multiple violations. And the toxicology data, dichloromethylene is the same as methylene chloride, showed very high levels in the blood of this worker. Methylene chloride has a couple of unique properties that make it really toxic, which always amazes me as to why it's sitting on the store shelf. The first of all, it's very volatile. It has a very low vapor pressure. So when you put it on a product, it evaporates really quickly. Now, that's just an inherent toxicologic property of methylene chloride. The second is that it's metabolized to carbon monoxide by the body. It's the only solvent that's metabolized by the body, forms carbon monoxide. It forms carboxyhemoglobin because it latches onto our red blood cells, and it causes cellular death because our red blood cells then can't deliver oxygen to our tissues. And the third property, which is not unique, but common to all solvents of this class, it causes respiratory depression, gets across, absorbed into the lungs, circulates around the blood, crosses into the blood-brain barrier, and then you stop breathing at high enough concentrations. So if number three wasn't enough, number one and number two, the high volatility and the carboxyhemoglobinemia, makes it an added risk. And there are many, many cases that have been documented in the toxicology literature, in the occupational medicine literature. There are dozens of cases in furniture refinishers, workers who go into confined spaces where the same things happen and they have high dichloromethane and carboxyhemoglobin levels in their blood. And this is very well documented. It occurs within minutes. So this is not some accumulated, I'm gradually feeling bad, it catches up to me, and in 2 hours I faint somewhere else. This is, I'm exposed, and within minutes the blood levels rise and the carboxyhemoglobin levels rise. JASCO, David mentioned earlier in the talk, is sort of like the Kleenex of methylene chloride. So many people, including myself, when these fatalities occurred, I went down and I found this in my garage. And I had this sitting, I have used this many times personally. And I am guilty. I don't read labels. My wife is always on my case because of all the people in the world who really should read labels and be aware of toxic chemicals, it should be me. And I am just like a lot of people, and I don't know if men are more guilty than women. I don't read labels. And this label says, use in a well-ventilated space. I don't know what your reaction is. My reaction to a warning label that says don't use in a well-ventilated space is basically, oh, maybe I should remember to open a window. Maybe I should get a portable fan. I don't know what that means. And it's interesting because in the process of doing this work, I wondered what the Consumer Product Safety Commission had done about these products. It's one of the agencies that regulates chemicals in the United States. And I was able to get from the CPSC a 1992 survey that was done by Westat, which is a big contract survey group, in which the CPSC had asked consumers in the United States, they had done a national sample of 4,000 consumers, and they asked the consumers do you read labels? Do you read paint labels, product labels? And then they asked, if you read them, do you do anything about what you read? And it was a fascinating, it was never published, it's sitting in the CPSC files, but I have a copy on my laptop because I got it sent to me on a disk. And not surprisingly, it says, Americans and workers don't read labels. And if they read labels, they do nothing about them by and large. And I think that's qualitatively something that we all know. It blew me away, quite honestly, because the whole basis of our, some of the basis of our worker protection and public health requirements in the United States are based on labeling and warning. And this study actually shows that it doesn't work. Which, I'll stop railing. There's about 8-point font on the side of this can. This is one of the major manufacturers. This is WM Bar. WM Bar, I don't know, probably has a good chunk of the market on methylene chloride. And one of the things that happens on the shelves is that it's marketed as Jasco, but it's also marketed as Clean Strip, and it's marketed as aircraft cleaner. It has about 5 or 6 different labels for the same product. And so it gets a lot of store shelf space, which is something I also learned about the consumer market in the United States, is that these products are the same, but they have different brand labels, but the same manufacturer, so they can get a lot of sales. I call this a carcinogen in a can. Methylene chloride is an IARC, an International Agency for Research on Cancer, class 1 carcinogen. Number 1A means it's a confirmed human carcinogen, because when you feed it to animals, it causes liver cancer. And I can buy it from Amazon.com. I can have a pallet delivered to my front door if I want to. So the VistaPain case had a special impact on me because I had read about the bathtub cases. I then got a call from our safety investigator who investigates our fatalities in LA, Hank. And Hank calls me and says, Bob, you know, I remember I went to the LA coroner's office a few months ago. And no, actually, I went there last year, he said to me. And I remember reading about a guy who died of methylene chloride poisoning in the coroner's logs in the LA coroner's office. And he had never told me about it because we don't investigate work-related fatalities due to methylene chloride poisoning in California. That was not one of the things we were focused on. And he said, Bob, I think this case may be the same. So we learned about this other methylene chloride case simply because, as I say, all occupational health is local, and that's the other thing I feel like I've learned. It all is like somebody making a synapse and making a telephone call. Surveillance data is great. I'm all for epidemiological data. I'm all for tracking and finding cases, but it happened to be because Hank remembered going to the coroner's office and reading something on a fatality log. So Hank went out and investigated this case, and this one really made me very upset, made me very angry, because this is a 24-year-old guy, and he was an Iraqi war vet. He had come back and gotten a part-time job in his local church where his mom was in the congregation. And he was a really hard worker. He was hired to be a part-time maintenance guy. His first month on the job, they told him to clean the baptismal font of the church, and the pastor's wife had methylene chloride that she had bought from Home Depot and said, here, use this. This is a good product. And the baptismal font, I learned this. I'm not a Baptist, and I didn't even know what a baptismal font was until I learned about this case. But it's basically a sunken bathtub in front of the church congregation where somebody is baptized. They're below the eye level. They're seen from waist down by the congregation. And the doors open like this. And it's essentially a bathtub, and there was a coating on that bathtub that was all ripply and worn away. So he poured about 1/2 gallon of methylene chloride on there. He closed the side doors and the front window because he didn't want the rest of the church to stink. And then he was found about 11 o'clock that night by the woman that came around to lock up the church dead. She saw the light on, and he had died there, slumped over. He had blood stains. You know, it was terrible. The congregation was all torn up. The mom ended up taking a leave for a year from her job. She was a healthcare worker at Kaiser. The congregation felt awful, terrible. OSHA came out, fined this employer $3,000. There wasn't any serious or willful fear. It was basically out of not knowing. And he had used a Jasco product from the local Home Depot store shelves. So here's your bathtub. So I said, well, why is this on the store shelf? And that's kind of like where I'm on this sort of obsessive mission to try to get this stuff, to try to figure out how we can move our paradigm away from toxic chemicals that both workers and consumers are using to safer substitutes. And there are a bunch of methylene chloride fatalities that occur in the United States. Interestingly, we can track worker fatalities, but we have no way to track consumer fatalities. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has a voluntary reporting of consumer fatalities in the United States. They only had one reported to them since the beginning of history, and that's a Texas man who died slumped in his bathtub in 2010, found by a 16-year-old daughter. But we don't have actually a consumer fatality surveillance system in the United States that I know of. We have poison center data, but that's voluntary if somebody happens to call and get hospitalized and then dies. So we then tried to figure out what's going on at the retail level. And this is one of the most fascinating little epidemiological studies that I've been involved with. We had this idea that we would have three epidemiologists pose as consumers. So it turned out to be three women posing as consumer, like, oh, I'm going in and I need to get the stuff off my bathroom wall. What do you think? I don't think we intentionally, study design-wise, chose women, but I think it's interesting to think if some macho guys had gone in and asked the same question, what the answers would have been. Anyway, it was three women, and that's Lauren, our epidemiologist. And the store should be really unnamed, but everybody will know that orange, what that orange is. So we did actually a sample, and there was an epidemiological study designed to this. We did a stratified random sample of big and little hardware stores in the San Francisco Bay Area. And there's Lauren asking the sales manager from the paint aisle, I'd like to buy something for removing paint from a bathtub. And I have a waterproof coating that I've warped, and I'm trying to remove it so I can repaint and refinish it. There's the little dots show our stores. They were big and little, and some of them were in Berkeley, which I would figure would have like the most green culture in the United States. If any place would have non-toxic, it should be Berkeley. Almost all the paint sales people told our three surveyors that methylene chloride worked the best. They always recommended it. Some of them would say, well, no, you shouldn't do it, hire a professional. Some actually advise reading the label, said, this stuff is really dangerous. And some said, advise your respirator because it's very potent. However, more said, well, just follow the instructions on the label. It's not dangerous. Wear disposable gloves. One store worker was more concerned about the safety of the tub than what it was going to do to the coating. And another worker said, well, I used to carry green strippers, but I don't sell them. So use methylene chloride. And so we said, how could this happen? And I'm going to sort of leap ahead for purposes of time, since I only have a couple of minutes. The short and the long of it is that all our regulatory and public health agencies, in my view, are inadequate to deal with this problem of why methylene chloride is on the store shelf. From OSHA that sets PELs to protect workers from dying, to the Consumer Product Safety Commission that mandates labels that are not read, to our Air Resources Board agency that only regulates products that get into the outdoor air but don't have the authority to regulate products that are used indoors like this. So if methylene chloride gets out of the stack of the factory, it becomes a problem, but the workers inside that are not covered by outdoor regulatory agencies. And what's even more alarming to me is that this was published back in 1981 in an industrial hygiene journal, where they actually recreated paint stripping and found that you reached IDLH levels in the air after about half hour to 45 minutes inside a room that's just like my bathroom at home. And here's just an example of the label. Finally, just let me mention two things. First of all, it's banned in Europe. In 2009, the European Union banned methylene chloride from paint strippers and phased it out completely for consumer and small do-it-yourselfer and small contractor use in June of 2012. And as far as I know, the sun is still setting and rising in Europe. And the last time I was there, and I checked in hardware stores, and I went into, and I looked at coatings in Europe, they look pretty good to me. In fact, the European bathrooms look really nice to me. And as far as I know, everything is still going really well in Europe, and they don't have to use methylene chloride and put it on store shelves. We've done some outreach, and I'm not going to go through this. Let me just end with one final story. So I decided to call up Home Depot. Will you give me one more minute? Okay. So I called up Home Depot, and I was in Atlanta for a public health meeting. And I realized, Home Depot's headquarters are outside of the suburbs of Atlanta. And I call them up and say, I'm a public health scientist from the California Department of Public Health. Can I talk to you about your sales of methylene chloride on your store shelves? And they said, sure. So I go down. I'm in the lobby of Home Depot, along with about 100 other people, all are trying to get Home Depot to sell their products. And I think I was probably the only public health scientist ever to, I'm one of the few ever to visit Smyrna's Home Depot headquarters. And I go down, I meet with Matt Baer, who Matt is a really great guy, and Matt is in charge of stocking every Home Depot shelf in the United States with paint and paint strippers. And I said to Matt and his four management team people, would you stop selling methylene chloride and sell those non-toxic alternatives? Because I think Home Depot has, you guys could be green. You could do like what Walmart or Target is doing. Even Walgreens has an area of here. You could buy non-toxic cosmetics. And the answer is, or was and is, if consumers want to buy it, we will sell it. So we go by sales volume. If methylene chloride is selling the most, it's going to get eye-level shelf space. And if benzyl alcohol were to sell the most, it would get eye-level shelf space. And so now, my next thought process is, how do we drive consumer market? Is there some way that we can drive consumers towards the non-toxic alternatives? I don't know the answer to that, because it's pushing this giant boulder up the hill, because when I was sitting there in Home Depot, it was Bob Harrison, and there were 100 other people who were marketing their products at Home Depot. And I can tell you, they're not marketing them on the basis of green, environmentally, or worker-friendly alternatives. So I'll end there.